ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Welcome to Arts in 30, your weekly wrap of global news in arts and culture. I'm Daniel Browning. And what a week it's been. We track the toxic fallout from the crisis engulfing Creative Australia, following the decision to first appoint and then unceremoniously dump Khaled Sabsaabi as Australia's representative artist at the 61st Venice Biennale. But first, the headlines with Sky Kirkham. Sky, there's a lot to get to today, so let's get a quick rip around.
Thanks, Daniel. An upcoming auction at Christie's, described as the first ever AI-dedicated sale at a major auction house, has drawn fire from artists. An open letter signed by more than 4,000 people has said that their support of these models incentivizes mass theft of human artists' work. Also, a greeting card company in the UK has brought a case against the celebrated and anonymous artist Banksy, claiming that he has failed to use his trademark and that it should therefore be cancelled. Banksy obviously disagrees. Onyx Storm by Rebecca Yarros has become the fastest-selling book in America in two decades, with more than 2.7 million copies sold in the first week. And for more on that phenomenon, you can check out The Bookshelf on ABCRN, where they've dived into that book in a lot of detail. At the BAFTA Awards, Conclave took out Best Film, while The Brutalist won Best Director, Mikey Madison won Best Actress for Anora, and Adrian Brody continued his role with a Best Actor win. The National Endowment for the Arts in America has announced that it's dropping a funding program that supports diversity, equity, and inclusion, and will instead use that funding on programs that celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States. Another music festival has been cancelled in Australia. Sold Out was due to run in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane starting on February 22nd, but organisers have pulled the plug, saying that they did not reach the level of support needed to remain financially viable. And finally, the Matildas are taking to the field this week in a match against Japan, wearing a new kit designed by the Australian artist Rico Rennie.
Thank you, Sky Kirkham. Now, the art sector is in crisis, and many are saying the principle of artistic freedom has been compromised after the arts funding agency Creative Australia dumped Khaled Sabsaabi. Their pick to represent Australia at next year's Venice Biennale, announced just days earlier. At the time, the CEO, Adrian Corlett, said that the decision to appoint the Lebanese-Australian artist reflected the diversity and plurality of Australia's rich culture and would spark meaningful conversations with audiences around the world. Less a spark and more a bin fire. The controversy kicked off when The Australian published a story questioning two video artworks from 2006 and 2007. One depicting the slain Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah, a work called Simply You, and another called Thank You Very Much, which used footage of the 9/11 attacks with vision of George W. Bush ending a media conference saying just that, thank you very much. The Federal Opposition's arts spokeswoman Claire Chandler put a question to the Arts Minister Tony Burke, imputing that Sabsaabi's earlier works had glorified terrorism, blindsiding the minister on the floor of Parliament. That night, Creative Australia's board held a crisis meeting and withdrew the invitation to Sabsaabi and curator Michael D'Agostino, an extraordinary and unparalleled move, saying in a media statement that a prolonged and divisive debate posed an unacceptable risk to public support for the arts, notwithstanding the agency's role as an advocate for freedom of artistic expression. Well, that decision shocked and outraged many leading figures in Australia's arts community, fueling claims of political interference and overreach. The other artists shortlisted for Venice joined the fray. They condemned the move and called for Sabsaabi to be reinstated, or for Australia to forfeit the Venice Biennale altogether, leaving the pavilion empty. Not a good look after winning the prestigious Golden Lion last year. Then two key bureaucrats in charge of Australia's representation at the Venice Biennale resigned. Michaela Tsai, who led Creative Australia's Visual Arts Department, and Program Manager Tamina Maskinyar, resigned as the crisis escalated. Lindy Lee, one of two artist representatives on the board, also quit, while philanthropist Simon Mordant resigned as International Ambassador for the Biennale, withdrawing his financial support for next year's presentation in the Australia Pavilion. The panel of industry advisers who decided the shortlist released a statement on Monday saying they'd not been involved in any discussions since they made their recommendations last year and had learned of the decision to dump the artistic team through the media. They've called on Creative Australia to reverse the decision and stand in support of the artist and curator, Michael D'Agostino. So much for avoiding a divisive debate. But why are so many people running scared? After all, we were here with the previous representative artist for the last Venice Biennale, Archie Moore, who was criticised by some in the media for his social media posts. But back then, Creative Australia didn't wobble. They backed up in support of the artist and weathered the storm, just as well because Archie and curator Ellie Buttrose went on to win Australia the coveted Golden Lion for Best Pavilion. As the recriminations and the fallout continues, there are suggestions of a flawed process, an inadequate risk assessment, and an apparent lack of due diligence in providing ministerial briefing notes. Here's the Arts Minister Tony Burke on ABC 7:30.
I contacted one person and one person only as soon as I came out of question time, and that was Adrian Collette. He's the CEO, and the reason I contacted him was questions had come up in the Senate about a particular work, which normally, like, I don't get involved in the decisions, but when something's due to be announced, I get sent up a brief with what are the different works, what are the different issues that might be considered controversial. That particular work had not been raised with me in any of the briefs and was clearly more controversial than anything that had been. So I was shocked when I saw that it was there, and I rang Adrian to find out what had happened. At that point, he had already determined that they were going to have a board meeting that night.
Arts Minister Tony Burke. Lizanne McGregor is the former director of the Museum of Contemporary Art in Sydney, who acquired Sibsibi's U video installation. She spoke to Fran Kelly on the Radio National Hour.
Artworks are complex. Now, that's why I say you can't make a decision based on a few images on the internet. And we had many discussions around that work at the MCA. And I think that is the reason why we should have a space for art. But, you know, this was 17 years ago. This is not the work he's doing now. And the acceptance of that proposal was based on what he was planning to do for Venice, which was about bringing people together. There's an automatic assumption that because he's Lebanese and because he's done this work in the past, that he might take one position. And that is not necessarily the case. There is so much room for nuance and for different readings of art. And that's what is so important.
So how did this decision happen and what does it mean for the industry? Tully Barnett is an associate professor in creative industries at Flinders University. Now, Tully, the minister said that he did not call for the rescinding of the commission to Khaled Sibsibi. We take him at his word, but how hands-off is the minister meant to be when it comes to Creative Australia decisions?
The hands-off nature of the relationship between the minister and and Creative Australia or the Australia Council is the most important aspect of the government's relationship to the arts, that it's meant to be incredibly hands-off, and that's why we've got the separate organisations. I guess there's a question now as to what hands-off really means.
Indeed. Now, is it a problem that there's a perception of political interference, whether or not there actually was?
The timing of the phone call has to be considered in terms of relation to political interference.
And that's because the phone call was made after the question in Parliament?
We understand that it was immediately after, and so that certainly indicates a level of interest in the work of Creative Australia.
Now, how unprecedented is this situation? Have there been major commissions cancelled before now?
There's been other kinds of interference over time. I'm thinking of the way that George Brandis responded to artist activism around funding for the arts that was coming from Transfield Services in the Sydney Biennale in 2014 as a way of creating some interference in saying that artists should take the funding from wherever it comes from and then punishing them for daring to question the source of that funding. Transfield Services was then involved in providing services to offshore detention in Nauru, and so that was a moment of interference from the minister. But I'm also thinking more recently of a case in 2020 when Casey Jenkins' artwork Immaculate was defunded after having received funding from the Australia Council in a grant, and then having received an approved variation to that grant, it was then that was rescinded when it was discovered that her project was being used to create a performance around fertility and women's rights and bodily experiences of pregnancy when she was going to self-inseminate on on stage in a live performance, and that was then appeared as an item of note from Peter Credlin on Sky News, and then that was defunded soon thereafter, which has led to some court cases. And so there are these histories of moments of interference. And I think, you know, that leading us to have some questions. I think that we would say that we were expecting to have less interference under the new cultural policy revive and in this term of government. And so that's why there's a particular outroar at the moment around this case and what it means for the arts in Australia.
Do you have a theory about what led to the situation? I mean, what went wrong in the process or in the response to reporting on Khaled Sabsabi's earlier work? What was the major flaw in that whole kind of series of events?
It sounds to me as if Tony Burke didn't receive the briefing notes that sometimes go with these things.
He says he received briefing notes, but not these works weren't included in the briefing notes.
So that is interesting. But I also think that there's a broader conversation here around interpretive literacies in the arts and culture sector. So, you know, these works that are being described are part of the cultural sector's art forms. You know, they are available for viewing. There are interpretation notes provided, for example, by the MCA, and we know with some time and reflection and looking at these works that they are asking important questions, and they are not in any way glorifying terrorism, for example, or terrorists, but asking important questions about the times that we live in. And so when we've got interpretive capacities, we can understand and engage with these artworks in nuanced and complicated ways and benefit from them. But when we are looking at the surface of these artworks, or at even worse, at the politicization of these artworks in question time, then they're not being understood in the depth with which the artist has created them.
Well, let's try to understand the art in the depth in which the artist intended. Professor John Clark is Emeritus Professor in Art History at the University of Sydney. John, can you take us into the artworks that have provoked so much hand-wringing? A work called You in the collection of the Museum of Contemporary Art in Sydney, which features the image of Hassan Nasrallah, the slain Hezbollah leader.
I'm trying to find it. I've got the book on Khaled by Bandicoot Publications, edited by Konguri Utis and others, with the foreword by the director of the Art Gallery of New South Wales, Michael Brand. None of which seems to be quoted by your the various people who find one of his works disconcerting. None of those people mention the many pictures of destroyed areas of Lebanon. None of those people mention that Khaled was blown up, nearly blown up by one bomb, and then had to suffer a bombardment of another when the Israelis invaded Lebanon. So, you know, are we talking about a survivor? We're talking like someone who is almost exactly like someone who'd been bombed in a European city in 1939 to 1945. So how this kind of escapes the hysterical reception of the fact that one Hezbollah leader happened to be in it, I don't know. I mean, and as to the work, I mean, I found more interesting works and much more uncomfortable works about Western Sydney by Khaled, which were exhibited in the Art Gallery of New South Wales, of people behaving in a neo-fascist way in a football match. And they were all white. Why don't our politicians object to that? Or do they not notice that the people who are doing it are white?
John, I know, very much know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask you anyway, John. Do these works glorify terrorism? Do they deify Nasrallah?
No, they don't. Absolutely, they're horrified at it. They're like anybody else coming across a massacre picture or work which deals with the horrors of the Second World War, and their jaw drops at the horror of it. That's it. That's what they're jaw-dropping pictures. He's personally unable sometimes to cope with the whole horror that he's depicting there. And it's a horror which, by the way, is not at somebody at the end of somebody else's televisual link. He's actually experienced it, seen it, been in it, watched bombs drop. You know, I mean, for God's sake, this is the kind of art which we don't see very often. And it's very, very, in a very careful and considered way, he's decided to control the pain and put it outside and get us to look at it carefully and then go on to higher conclusions, perhaps better behavior. I don't know. States don't really pay attention to these things, as far as I know. He's articulated himself through his own experience. He hasn't sort of put in nice, comfortable references to Delacroix or other people who depicted horrors in the Middle East in the 19th century in academic painting. He doesn't sort of proclaim himself to be a great artist in the great continuity of people who've looked at these things or experienced these things. I like Goya, for example, who definitely experienced the horrors of the wars with the French and then civil wars after it. But he doesn't sort of say, I'm in the same domain as Goya, you know, or Delacroix or whatever. He just looks at what he's seen. And, of course, the great advantage of having you working with photographic media is you can replicate the image, and he manipulates that very carefully and very usefully. So we, after seeing one of his multiple displays, we think, what is the meaning of a human being in this kind of context? What is the meaning of people making political decisions about inflicting this damage on other human beings? Well, you know, he doesn't actually grandstand, as he could very easily do. He more quietly steps back in a meditative way and looks at what's been done in the name of human, our lot, our gang. And then, of course, when you get to that point, if a politician actually did get to that point, it'd be very interesting. The our gang bit falls away and we all become humans in this sea of humanity, which has been manipulated and murdered and crashed into the ground.
The reaction from the art community has been immediate and loud in response to this decision. Penelope Benton is the executive director of NAVA, the National Association for the Visual Arts. Now, Penelope, NAVA released a statement in support of Khaled Sabsaabi and Michael D'Agostino, and you said this was a devastating and terrifying moment for artistic freedom in Australia. Why is it such a big moment?
This decision sets an incredibly dangerous precedent. Creative Australia, as we know, was established as an independent arm's length funding body to ensure artistic decisions are made free from political and media influence. And this principle of arm's length peer review funding just must be respected. It's really important also that artists feel safe to make work and commentary about the things that they feel are important. The fact that the board overturned an expert panel's decision after political and media pressure completely negates the principle of independent arts funding and raises serious concerns about its future in this country. I think the impact of this moment risks creating an environment where artists and institutions feel pressured to avoid difficult topics and ultimately weakening the role of the arts in fostering critical discourse and challenging us to see things from other perspectives.
Now, how did you buy Creative Australia's argument that a divisive and prolonged debate about Khaled's suitability would harm this kind of very tender relationship that the public has with the arts community? And they said it posed an unacceptable risk that a debate like this, like we're having at the moment, as a result, would cause irreparable damage. What do you make of that excuse?
Look, the decision has created a massive public outrage across the arts sector and beyond. I think if the aim was to maintain public confidence in the arts, withdrawing support from an internationally respected artist due to a misrepresentation of his work, taken out of context, it raises serious questions about how funding decisions are being made. I think the role of an independent arts funding body is to support artists and stand behind them, beside them, and base these decisions on expertise and peer review, not to respond to political or media pressure. I think the real unacceptable risk is the one that this decision creates, you know, the risk that artists will self-censor, that institutions will bow to political intimidation, and that critical, thought-provoking work will be deemed too controversial to support.
Now, many figures in the art world, including the other shortlisted artists, have called for Khaled and Michael's reinstatement. Do you think there's any chance that will happen?
Look, I really do hope so, and it should happen. The right thing to do is for Creative Australia to reinstate Caleb Sarsabi and Michael D'Agostino as Australia's representatives at the Venice Biennale. This backflip decision was based on a misrepresentation of Khaled's work, and the arts community has been really strong in calling for it to be reversed. The pressure to address this issue is only growing. I think Creative Australia need to stand by its commitment to independent, peer-reviewed funding decisions and ensure that political and media influence does not determine which artists are given major opportunities and which people we put forward. If this decision isn't reconsidered, it risks setting a precedent that could have lasting consequences for artistic freedom in this country.
You've just heard from Penelope Benton, who's the Executive Director of NAVA, Professor John Clark, Emeritus Professor in Art History at the University of Sydney, and Tully Barnett, Associate Professor in Creative Industries at Flinders University. We put in requests to Michaela Tai, Tamina Maskinyar, outgoing board member Lindy Lee, several members of the advisory panel, former ambassador and philanthropist Simon Mordant, and to the management of Creative Australia. But none of them were prepared to comment at this point beyond their written statements. Every week here on Arts in 30, I'm joined by a music aficionado from across the ABC's music networks to bring you the one track you should be listening to, our track of the week. And this week, Ellie Parnell from The Music Show on Radio National joins me. Ellie, welcome.
Thanks, Daniel.
And who have you got for us this week?
We've got a band stoking up one of those sort of age-old rivalries, and that is The Beatles versus The Stones. Mm. So I don't know where you sit on this divide. I think I'm firmly Beatles
camp. I think I'm
camp.
Beatles, yeah.
Yeah. I think they changed music more than most other bands. This rivalry is sort of the heart of this new single from the Audrys, who are a fantastic band from South Australia. I'm not sure if people know them, but they have been around for about 20 years, and this is a sort of a taste of their new album that's coming, which is very exciting because it's been over 10 years since they last put out an album. So I've had this on repeat since I first heard it, because it's such an earworm, this song.
Now, where do we find out where they stand on the Beatles versus Stones fracas, or what kind of perspective do they lend to the whole kind of thing?
I've read that the lead singer here, Tasha Coates, is a Stones sort of person. So there you go. We can have that debate later with Tasha. But I'll give you a little bit of background to the Audrys, because I think they're a fantastic band. Basically, it's sort of started as a duo with Tasha Coates and Tristan Goodall, and they were sort of immediately onto a good thing. You know, their first album won the ARIA for Best Blues and Roots Album, and they've pretty much won that same ARIA for their subsequent albums. So really sort of incredible songwriting and great and chemistry in the band. Very sadly, Tristan Goodall passed away a few years ago now, but before he did, he gave Tasha his blessing to find new band members and to keep the band going, which is what they're doing. So it's quite incredible to see a band that, you know, that's quite a lot of fresh players here, but they're continuing on the legacy of a great songwriter, and the band sounds just as good as ever, and they're writing new songs together as well as honouring some of those older songs that Tristan helped to write. So yeah, it's awesome that they're still going and then they're still putting out music and touring.
And it's a rebirth of sorts, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. And this new song is, yeah, kicking up dinner table conversations about where on the divide you sit.
Ellie, can you introduce this track for us?
This is from the Audrey's, Beatles versus Stones.
When I look back, I see I should have known. 'Cause he liked the Beatles and I liked the Stones. But it's orbit the hell out of living alone. So we'd play Sergeant Pepper's and I'd sing along. Sometimes it comes along and you don't stand a chance. You just stand around like a fool for romance. Sometimes it comes along and it feels like the world is brand new. Mm-hmm. When I think back, it was doomed from the start. Flowers can't grow when they're kept in the dark. Two broken people with two broken hearts. Can't go looking for love in a world torn apart. Sometimes it comes along and you don't stand a chance. Just stand around like a fool for romance. Sometimes it comes along and it feels like the world is brand new. Sometimes it comes along and it don't mean a thing. A wave on the ocean, a bird on the wing. Sometimes it comes along and it takes everything that you knew.
That was Beatles versus Stones by the Audrey's, the track selected by our music correspondent Ellie Parnell. That's all we have time for here on Arts in 30. Thanks to producer Sky Kirkham, executive producer C. Benedict, and sound engineer Matthew Crawford. If you've got a story for us, you can send us an email, artsin30@abc.net.au. That's arts, A-R-T-S-I-N-3-0 at abc.net.au. And if you're enjoying the show, do let a friend know and make sure to hit the heart button on the ABC Listen app, so that you never miss an episode. I'm Daniel Browning. I'll catch you next time.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.